I'm going to talk about some of our experiments with the Cornell panel data, which was in the original proposal, and I'm going to talk about the work that we're now doing, which is kind of abandoning the Cornell panels and going back to the actual original panels and coding our own variables because of certain issues that I'll talk about as we go through the presentation. If you remember from yesterday, the original proposal that we had was to produce this model of welfare regimes and then incorporate variables from these sort of latent class analyses and so on into a panel data set to see whether we could show the effects of different regime shifts on people's unemployment experience or poverty experience or whatever it was we wanted to measure over time. Using this Cornell data, I'll talk about the Cornell data in a minute. This was from yesterday, the basic idea. So we have panel data sets that we can work out employment, poverty trajectories and so on because it's longitudinal data and we have quite long time periods. And we also have this macro data that we were trying to disentangle and feed variables derived from the macro into the micro. As we saw yesterday, the latent class analysis didn't really give us anything to go on because if countries stay in the same class for the whole period that you have the panel for, then there's no variation and you can't really do anything with it. So another approach that we've tried is instead of using latent class analysis to use a CFA model like the ones I showed you yesterday measuring poverty, can we use the macro data to produce scores that pick up generosity or policy change? So rather than classes, can we try and include continuous measures of generosity based on the macro data in the micro panels? That's the basic idea that we tried. So if you remember from yesterday where I was showing you those models of poverty using a comprehensive poverty index, what we can do instead with the macro data is try and measure unemployment, generosity and family policy using the macro data from the Scruggs database. So if we include variables like family allowance, maternity leave duration and pay and things like that, we can measure a latent concept that we call family policy or a latent concept of unemployment generosity over time and then try and feed that into panels. So we ran that model, and just to give you an idea of what the scores look like, if you look at the average scores over the whole time period, you can see already that, you know, the US is the worst, least generous. Countries that are quite generous, France, Austria and Belgium, come out very high. Sweden, you know, it gives you an idea that this is over 3 decades, so it's kind of averaging out a lot of things, but it looks like it's telling us a kind of familiar story. We can also plot the changes in these measures over time. So if you look at the green line, which is the UK, you can see that there was, when Margaret Thatcher came into power, there was a big drop in the generosity scores. So it looks like it's telling us, you know, that it's picking up something. But on the other hand, it's fairly flat for other countries. So Germany, nothing much happens, for example, for a whole period. This is a problem with these databases, that very little sometimes changes for a long time, and then there'll be a big jump in one of the replacement rates or something like that. And it's difficult to incorporate these variables into panels when your panel doesn't cover the whole period because there's no variation. So if your panel only is from here, you're not going to pick much up in terms of policy change, and that's a problem that we've repeatedly faced, especially with the British data, which we only have from 1991 onwards. It's not such a problem with the US, because we have the PSID going back to like 1970 or something. So there are issues there about, because of the average production worker averaging everything out, we don't see much jumping in the indices of generosity, so it causes problems for the models. This is the family policy measures. And again, you know, Germany's steadily increasing generosity in family policy. America had a very, very flat, nothing happening at all until the 90s, and then there was a jump, and then it's flat again. So again, these things, not necessarily that useful to put into panel data unless you've got a very, very long series. And the British, for some reason, just oscillates in the 90s from one number to another. I have no idea why. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but that's what the Scruggs database, or this is the Gautier database, this is what happens when you try and measure these things. It's very crude, I think. Well, anyway, that aside, what happens when you try and use it in microdata? So we got the Cornell database, which is, on the surface, the Cornell database is pretty good, because you've got these, you know, lots of countries supposedly harmonized over a very long period of time. So, you know, we have, it's got US, Germany, Britain, Canada, Australia, Switzerland, Korea. I think they're bringing in Russia and China as well, so soon there'll be even more countries. But because they're harmonizing so many countries, they have to make lots of compromises. So you get variables that are not necessarily that useful. And when you know what's in the British Household Panel Survey or the German Socioeconomic Panel, you can see what you really could do if you restricted the number of countries. You tend to think, well, the Cornell data, it's better not to use it. We might as well go and use the original panels, but not do a lot of countries. And that's basically where we're heading. So I'll show you what happens when we use the Cornell data. We're only looking at three countries. So we're looking at the US from 71 to 99, UK 91 to 99, Germany 84 to 99. This was the data we had at the time when we did this analysis to see whether we would carry on using the Cornell data. So the idea is we run separate models for each country. We have Britain from 91, 92 down to 99. We feed in the generosity scores that we got from the macro CFA, and then we add some controls and try different types of different models. And the dependent variable in these models is worklessness. So one of the problems with the Cornell data is, for the US, you can't actually pick up unemployment. It's only workless or not workless. Whereas in the other data sets, it's unemployed and looking for work, non-employed and working. So there are other problems with Cornell that we can't really look at active unemployed people in the same way that we can for British, because the US doesn't have that. So again, you'd have to go back to PSID and try and figure out a way of calculating whether you could pick up people that were genuinely unemployed and looking for work, and I don't think you can, actually. So that's another problem. So we're looking at just worklessness. So if we look at men, and our dependent variable is whether you're workless at time T. We look at whether you were workless the previous year, which is the very big effect, it's a lag dependent variable. These are random effects probability models. We stick in the unemployment generosity variable and lag it, assuming that there's a delay in the effect. It doesn't actually make any difference whether you lag it or not. And you get, you know, a negative and significant effect on the United States. So the more generous the United States is at any particular time, it looks like it reduces worklessness. Germany, there's no effect. And in Britain, it all goes crazy because there's very little variation in that variable across the time period of the 90s when we have the data. So it actually gives you a spurious result. It's not real. So we can't really do this analysis very well for Britain. We also tried merging the data together and seeing if there were country effects, and there do appear to be. So you're more likely to be workless in Britain or Germany compared to the United States, for example. Other effects are, you know, the old, if you're in the 50s, you're more likely to be workless. If you have a partner, you're less likely on the whole, but not in Germany. So there are other effects that we can bring in with controls. There are also controls for occupation, but there are other problems with occupation I'm going to talk about. So that was the basic idea, but for example, in the British case, it's not working because we don't have any variation. So just to raise those issues again, we need a long time period. We can't just use Britain because we don't have a long enough panel to incorporate the variables, because there's not enough variation over time. It looks like there are some significant policy effects. For example, in the United States, the more generous the United States has been, the less worklessness there appears to be. But there are problems. The CNEF, we can't look at unemployment instead of worklessness, for example. I don't understand how they've coded the occupations in the United States, because they don't have an ISCO variable, and there seems to be quite a lot of inconsistencies in the coding. So even when we control for occupation, we're not really sure what exactly we're doing or whether it's comparable between the other countries in the study. And also there are variables like we wanted to put education in, but there is no education variable on the Cornell data for Britain. It's only for the US and Germany. So again, you're thinking, well, we need to go back to the original panels to work out comparable measures of education, et cetera, et cetera. And we're back to abandoning Cornell and going back to doing a lot more hard work recoding the original data. Just to show you these are models with education rather than occupation as the control. So we find in all our models that one of the main drivers of worklessness or unemployment is education. And again, we find here that it changes the effect of the policy when we add different controls. So before, there was no significant effect in the German model of worklessness, but when you include education rather than occupation, it starts to creep into being a significant effect. And I'm not quite sure why that would be the case, and I think that's another thing that worries me about using the Cornell data to do this kind of analysis. And I don't think we've got a good answer for that question at the moment. So different controls give you different policy effects. So it looks like for some reason the policy effects are not independent of the controls, which I don't understand. I don't have an explanation for that. But we can start to say things like, you know, it looks like, you know, men stay out of work longer in Germany after you control for human capital and so on. It looks like there might be effects of the generosity of the system on people's experience of worklessness. And there are other effects which do make sense, like having a partner and so on. If we look at women instead and look at the family policy effect, we find that the more generous family policies are in the US and Germany, the less likely a woman is to be workless. Whereas in Britain, it's the complete opposite is the case. And again, if you control for other things like age and having children, for example, whereas having a child for men generally puts them into work, for women it's the other way around. So having young children, as you'd expect, tends to push women out of the labour market. And these things are being picked up. And if we have a merged model, we can show differences between countries. So it looks like Britain and Germany, or women are more likely to be workless than women in the United States after you control for other things. So in some ways, some of the models look quite nice and they seem to work, and in other experiences are that it doesn't make a lot of sense. So it looks like we're picking up some kind of family policy effect on female participation. But again, I'll show you a model now with education instead of occupation. And we can't do Britain again because there's no education variable in the Cornell for Britain. Now, the United States is no longer significant. So what does that mean? It's very difficult to work out why, when you just change occupation for education, which is just a kind of a proxy maybe for human capital, why does the family policy variable suddenly drop out? And I don't really know, and I'm not confident that these models are really getting to the hub of the matter. So it looks like we can measure generosity using structural equation models, although the fits are not fantastic. But when we start to put them in the micro data, we get conflicting and strange looking results, which are hard to explain. So obviously, because we do have access to the raw panels, it keeps coming back to us to think, well, let's abandon the Cornell data and go back to the BHPS and the PSID and make our own variables up and do it that way. But obviously, that takes a lot longer to do. But that's what we're working on at the moment. The other thing that we did was to produce these policy synopses. So what we did was we got several master's students to go through the countries in the study and document all the major policy changes that have taken place going back to the early 70s, wasn't it, I think? Yeah. So instead of trying to make these things work using these sort of sophisticated techniques, why don't we just try and incorporate real policy change variables in the model? So we have these synopses where we've got details of all the major policy changes to do with family and family policy and so on. So what we've tried initially is just to take Germany and Britain, recode the BHPS and the German socioeconomic panel ourselves, and then include dummy variables that represent major policy changes. Because if you actually look at major policy changes in reality, for example, the Hartz reforms, there's no change in the macro data of generosity at that point. So even though we know that the Hartz reforms have made things much less generous for certain German workers, it's not picked up in the Scruggs data. So this might be a better way of actually seeing whether policy changes actually make any difference. We actually just plug in a dummy variable in the models that represent when a policy change took place and see whether it has any effects. The other issue with this is that the Germany and the UK have quite different policy histories. The way things tend to happen in Britain is that policies get switched on and off. So you have a New Deal policy and it goes on for 3 or 4 years and then they change it and it turns into something else. What's been happening in Germany is that they introduce a policy and then they introduce another policy, but they don't close down the policy they introduced before, and there's accumulation of policy impacts. So we have to model that in a different way. So in the UK, the main policy initiatives that we're going to cover, which was we're looking at 96 onwards, are the New Deals, which were aimed at, targeted at different groups of the unemployed, like based on age or duration of unemployment. The minimum wage, which was introduced by New Labour, and the changes in the tax credit system, which were supposed to help families, especially families that go back to work. And in Germany, we have over the same time period, we've got the tightening of suitability for benefits and the introduction of unemployment benefit version 2, the Hartz reforms, and there was a whole raft of incremental family policy changes over the period from the mid-90s through to the present day. The timing of these things, this is what we're going to put in the models, is on this side. So the New Deal for young people, that's people under 25, was brought in 1998 in Britain and stayed. Things like the New Deal for the long-term unemployed came in 1998, but then was phased out in 2000. There were these changes to the tax credit system. I mean, working families tax credit was in place for 4 years, and then it was replaced by the working tax credit. So we can stick dummy variables based on these policy changes in the panels, and the German ones, as you can see, it's more of accumulation of policy change. So they brought they tightened up the suitability criteria in 1998 for work. Then they brought in the Hartz reforms in 2005, but they didn't get rid of the other things. So lots of changes to family policy, childcare entitlements. Then they introduced the Parents to Work Part Time directives. Then they introduced the childcare tax allowance the following year. Then they introduced an expansion of childcare for under threes. So the German system seems to just incrementally add policies. So we can model these changes in our panels and see whether there are any changes, significant changes during the periods when these policy changes took place. So if we look at men, the dependent variable in these models is whether you've got a job. So the first two columns are just unemployed people. So if you were unemployed the previous year, have you got a job now? Did the policies make any difference? But if you look at the New Deal for young people, if we interact it with people that are aged under 25, they're the people that are eligible for the policy, there is a marginally significant effect, and it's positive. So it looks like if you were an unemployed person under 25, there was a marginal impact of the policy on whether you found a job or not. The only other thing that's really significant in this model is whether you were married and your education. So now we've got education back because we've gone back to the original panels. So we can put education in the model. If we look at family policy on men, there's also unemployed men, there's also a marginal effect of working tax credit. Then if you look at these two columns, this is the panel as a whole. So this is modelling the likelihood of you being in a job at any particular time, and this is the whole sample. Here we start to get an odd result, but that's because we haven't controlled for age in this model. So this New Deal for young people being negative is actually because young people under 25 are much more likely to be unemployed than anybody else. So we have to do some more work on these models to fix, to check some of these things. But you can see that, you know, as a whole, when they brought the New Deal for the long-term unemployed, it looks like it actually had a positive impact on men being in work. And again, you find other things like if you've got a partner, you're more likely to be in work. So we're controlling for other things. Education is, again, the biggest effect in the model. So, I mean, compared with education, these might be significant, but they're quite small effects. But nevertheless, it looks like the policy variables are actually doing something. And also the family tax credit system also seems to have improved the likelihood of men being in work. So these two things that were brought in seem to have an effect. Well, something was going on at the same time that those policies were in place that's having a significant effect on work being in work. If we look at women, we find there's very little going on with the New Deals. They're not doing very much at all. And actually, the family policy is pulling women out of the labour market. So when the family tax credit system comes in, women don't go to work because the men go to work. That, I think that's what's happening. But we still have to check these things. So it looks like, you know, again, you get the usual other things, and having children for women, you know, young children pulls them out, and then when the children get older, women can go back to work. So we find these other effects as well. And again, education is the biggest effect. But also we're getting something to work with here. If we look at Germany, what I've done here is I've interacted the incremental level of family policy with whether someone has a family. So we're only switching these dummies on for the relevant people, but we have to refine what we mean by relevant when we carry on doing this work. But it does appear that for women, the Hartz reforms and the suitability, for men, the Hartz reforms and the suitability criteria don't make any difference. But the family policies do. So when these incremental family policies have been brought in, men are more and more likely to go into the labour market, into work. And again, you can control for other things like having family responsibilities makes men go to work in Germany. And again, education is extremely strong. It's the strongest effects in the model by far. And relative to the policy variables, education dwarfs the policy effect. If we look at women, we find a similar picture to Britain. The family policy changes have generally stopped women going back to work. But if you're an unemployed woman, now we find that the Hartz reforms and the suitability criteria tend to be putting women into work. So again, we have significant effects which would not have been picked up in using the CFA models or using Scruggs data. We've tried just using replacement rates and things like that, and nothing seems to work. But when we actually plug in these sort of policy variables, it seems to start to tell us a story about the impacts of these policies on whether people are working or not. So just to conclude from these regressions, the macro policy variables that we have from the CFA models don't tell us the same stories as the policy synopsis variables, and that's because when there are major policy changes, because of the way these macro databases are put together, they're not actually picked up. And it's partly because of things like the average production worker, that if the Hartz reforms don't affect an average production worker who doesn't even really exist to a great extent, then you're not going to pick up effects of that using Scruggs data. You will be able to pick it up if you just include a policy dummy in the model. So I think that's the direction that we should pursue now. But interpretation of some of these variables is quite difficult. I've got time, yeah. The other thing that I think we can try, which I think is quite promising, is another version of structural equation modelling, called latent growth models. Basically what these do is they measure trajectories. So the those sort of panel regressions, we're only looking at one year at a time. And what it might be useful to do as a supplement to that is to look at more longer term or medium term changes. And I've tried some models on the British data, which to me look quite promising, but this project's still got about 6 or 7 months to run, so this is where we're up to now. I'll just quickly explain what a latent growth model is. If you're interested in poverty like me, if you remember yesterday, we had this model where we could predict a poverty index for people over a very long period of time using the British Household Panel. What a latent growth model does, it takes those scores, or any can be any time series, actually doesn't have to be derived from a latent model, and it summarises them by working out a latent intercept and a latent slope. So the intercept represents people's baseline level. So people's baseline poverty level will be picked up with the intercept. So somebody that's very poor at the beginning of the panel will have a high intercept. If they get better off over time, or worse off over time, they'll have a positive or negative slope. And you can basically summarise a time series in terms of these intercepts and slopes using what's called latent growth modelling. So you run in M plus or AMOS, and you can work out these coefficients. So you can work out the mean of the slope, standard deviation of the slope, whether there's a correlation between the intercept and the slope, etc. And these can all be interpreted. But you can also put controls in. And all sorts of other things. So if we run the model on the data I showed you yesterday, which is the poverty data, you find that the mean of the intercept is 0.34, which was the actual sample mean of the index. The mean of the slope is negative, because as we saw yesterday, during the period we were looking at, poverty declined, so you expect to see a negative slope. There's a correlation between the slope and the intercept, which is negative. So people that the more poor you were at the beginning, the more likely you were to have a stronger slope. And there's more variation in the intercept and the slope. So people tend to have quite a varied initial poverty, but people's slopes tend to be similar and downward. So this is the kind of thing you can begin to get from looking at a latent growth model. But as I said, we can also add covariates. So for example, we could add gender and age, characteristics of households, and so on, and events. Because we're looking at longitudinal data again, we can include things like divorce or having children in the model and see what impact that has on the long-term trajectory of what we're interested in, which might be work, or it might be poverty, or whatever. So this is now what I'm thinking about, would be another thing we could do before the end of the project. What we would look at, say, labour market trajectories and poverty trajectories using this framework and this methodology over sort of windows. We've done this before with other projects. So to look at medium-term change, we might take a 5-year window in the panel and see what effects people's trajectories have in that medium-term period on the next 5-year window and the next 5-year window and so on. And we can include the policy synopsis variables as time-varying covariates in the model and see whether although we know it looks like these policies are having an effect in the here and now, so on a wave-by-wave basis, but do they have an effect on people's trajectories in the longer term? And I think that's something that's a different question, but it's a good one to ask. So I'll just show you a quick example of what I've been doing previously. This is a combination of several latent growth models using the British data. So we have a model of worklessness where we have an intercept and a slope. So people that have positive slopes are people that have been unemployed but are going into work, etc. We can control for human capital and things on the intercept of being in work. So the higher your education, the less likely you are to be worthless at the beginning. And we can see whether there's an effect of the worthless trajectories on the poverty trajectories, and there is. So there are positive relationships between someone being in and out of work and people being in and out of poverty. And then we can also then show that there's a knock-on effect into the next 5 years. So if we look at, we know poverty's sticky, then we can model that. And we can also model extra dimensions of worthlessness at the same time. So this is quite a sophisticated way of analysing the panels, where we could also incorporate policy data. And we can also control for triggers. So if you had children in the previous 5 years, you're more likely to be poor in the following 5 years. You've got an extra mouth to feed. If you separated from your partner, you're also more likely to be poor in the following 5 years. So we can see how we can include triggers in these latent growth models. Just to show you what one thing that I want to do next is to look at training. So the German data and the British data have quite good data on training, which we haven't included yet. But if you include the training variables in the UK into the model, what we're saying here is, for example, that human capital and so on affect your level of work, being in work or out of work. But if you have training, you would expect it to affect the slope. So if you have training, you'd expect it to lift the likelihood of you getting a job later on, if the training policies work. And the BHPS has quite detailed data on training that we can put in. So these purple variables are on-the-job training types, and the red ones are sort of off-the-job training, which is more like government schemes and so on. And what you find is, for example, that if you're on the job and you're improving your existing skills, upskilling, or having even general training, it's reducing the workless slope. So it means that in the longer term, you're more likely to find a job, stay in work, or get another job. Whereas and they're quite high coefficients. Whereas the off the job training, they're still significant, but they're not as big. So you can see that it's better for people to be trained at work than it is to be trained, as in some sort of scheme that doesn't involve actual real work. So these are the sorts of things that we can start to do with this kind of modelling approach, and I think this will be a useful thing to pursue, including the synopses as well. So. And again, as I said, this is the last slide. We can incorporate all sorts of causal chains in this kind of approach, and we can take the whole periods of the panels and model them as medium-term effects. So that's basically it.